We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We are joined in studio this Monday night by the Wall of Famer from the Buffalo Bills, CBS analyst Steve Tasker. Good evening, Steve. Thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
The day after the Super Bowl, the lights stayed on last night. I'm sure you were probably one of the few guys in America watching the electrical supply at MetLife Stadium.
Yeah, they had no issues, including the weather, which was, wow, that's unbelievable. Now we're gonna get another cold weather. Cold weather Super Bowl again, just because it turned out so well.
Yeah, they dodged a bullet there. The game itself, boy, it was tough to watch, Steve. It was the worst Super Bowl I've seen since...
Since ours, yeah.
Pretty much since Pasadena Super Bowl.
Pasadena, yeah. And for that reason, I could not watch the whole game. I mean, I watched most of it, but there were times when I just had to leave the room because I felt it. I mean, I could feel what those guys were on the Broncos were going through. I couldn't, I just wanted to walk. I had to walk out and take a deep breath and go do something else for a few minutes and then come back in.
That's amazing. 25 years later, you still feel it.
I still feel it. I really, really felt uncomfortable watching it.
They took those shots of the Broncos bench, the shots that probably got to you. Is there any feeling like that you've ever experienced in your life?
No, when you're playing against a team like the Seahawks were playing last night, I mean, there's no answer. I mean, and this is my thoughts too. We no question, Peyton played bad last night, Peyton Manning, and he did or the other night, and he didn't. You know, in fact, that was probably as bad a game as I've ever seen him play.
Yeah.
But the whole conversation has been about his legacy and is he one of the greatest or the greatest of all time? You know, certainly if he wins the game, he's in that conversation. I think he's still in the conversation, even though he played as poorly as he did in that game. But you pick your quarterback. You pick Joe Montana or Brett Favre or John Elway or you can pick your own. Jim Kelly, Marino, Favre, you can pick any quarterback you want. If you take that quarterback of your choice in his best game with his best offensive guys around him, everybody, every last one of them would have gotten chewed up and spit out by the Seattle Seahawks in this Super Bowl last week. The Seahawks were not going to get beat. The 85 Bears, you pick the team of your choice, and they would have gotten absolutely eaten alive by that team.
Seattle was that good defensively. It wasn't anything, from what I could tell, and from what the Seahawks are saying after the game, they didn't do anything special or exotic. It was pretty basic defense.
They physically dominated them. And I think one of the things that came about as a result of that, and you saw it through the regular season, this Denver offense was the best we'd ever seen for a season.
Yeah.
More passing yards, I mean, more scoring, I mean, touchdown record. And here's what happened. Peyton Manning covers so many weaknesses of that team. His offensive line was exposed in that Super Bowl because they couldn't match up physically with the four rushers the Seahawks brought. They absolutely got dominated, and Peyton couldn't get rid of the ball fast enough because the secondary covered up his receivers so quickly. They were throwing two-yard passes predominantly all night. He set a record for the most completions. He didn't set any records in yardage.
Right.
And it was because during the regular season, he's so good. And most times with those four weapons on the outside, they could find somebody. But that pass rush of the Seahawks was in his face so fast, consistently, in that Super Bowl that his offensive line couldn't cope with him and he couldn't get rid of the ball. He had a tipped interception, bad throw, get rid of it. And Peyton's going to get rid of it because he can't get hit. If he doesn't want to get hit and shouldn't get hit because you don't know if he's going to be able to survive it.
Sure.
So he gets rid of the football and thus throwing it into some bad spots and gets intercepted.
There was a lot of talk in the run-up to the Super Bowl game about Peyton Manning's legacy and then talk Troy Aikman during the game and certainly post-game about his legacy. I think Aikman said this does not damage his legacy. I think it does. I mean, it's part of his legacy, that performance
yesterday.
He's one of the all-time greats, no question.
A little bit.
But that's part of his legacy, that performance yesterday.
Yeah, but his legacy, you can't say he can't win the big one. He did.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, you can't say he's not a good playoff quarterback. He won 11 games in the playoff. Now, he lost more than that. But
what is he, 11 and 13?
11 and 12, I think, now. And so, yeah, I mean, but he's certainly in the conversation for the best quarterback ever. But I think in run-up to the game, I said this, and I still feel it. Winning that game would have really helped his legacy, absolutely put him over the top as in the conversation with one or two or three guys. But losing it doesn't hurt it as much as it would have helped it if he had won. Because as much as you can say, well, is he the best or the best ever? He may not be the best ever, or he may be, but I'll tell you this. He is the absolute most significant quarterback to have played the game in our lifetime and perhaps in the history of the game.
Why do you say that?
Because he changed the paradigm by which quarterbacks are evaluated. He changed the expectations of every quarterback across the league from his point forward of what is expected of them in preparation and what is expected of them to be able to do on the field, on the fly. It's all because of Peyton Manning and his ability and his preparedness on the field that other quarterbacks are expected to be able to change plays, call their own plays, work the no huddle, work the snap count, work personnel combinations, dictate matchups. All of that is expected of a top-flight quarterback now, and it was not before Peyton Manning came into the league.
It's a good point. One more thing about in the run-up to the game, there was speculation that Peyton might somehow step aside after this year, after that game. There's no way he can step aside now. He can't leave that as his lasting impression on anybody.
Well, you never say never, but it certainly would be difficult for him. And I don't think that he was planning. Even if he won the game, I don't think he would have walked away. I think he's smart enough to know in the big picture of life, if you can play professional sports, you want to play it as long as you can. It is a gift. And his career has been a gift to all of us. We have all watched it. And even if you're not a Peyton Manning fan, or an Indianapolis Colt fan, or you're sick and tired of it, or you think, you know, whatever, you don't like his commercials, whatever you want to say. His gift, his career has been a gift to all of us, and I think he knows in the big picture you want to make it go as far as you can. And even in the retrospect, Johnny Unitas, when he ended up as a out on the West Coast with the San Diego Chargers, and Joe Namath ending up with the Rams, and other player, Joe Montana, going to Kansas City, it didn't damage their legacy. It just, you know, it's just one more chapter of it, and one that makes us all realize how special you were when you were good.
Talking with Steve Tasker, the Bills Wall of Famer. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. Over the weekend as well, the legacy of Andre Reed got a major boost with the announcement on Saturday that he is finally, in his eighth time as a finalist, finally been elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Awesome. You got to think, well, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
He was number three in every in career yardage in every significant category when he retired. Nobody before him had the kind of career that he'd had. He was the guy in that no huddle in the league that was changing into more of what we see now. That was an offense that went three wide all the time. He was the slot guy. He was, you know, he played Wes Welker's spot. 10 years before Wes Welker was in the league and made a living doing it and was a part of a great offense and a great football team. And he was different. Even at the time that he played, his abilities and the way he ran and the way he played was different than other guys. His run after the catch was legendary. He was strong, built like a running back. He was very thick for a wideout in that time. And he was good-sized inside, so he was a difficult matchup. And I think the way that Ted Marchabrota and Jim threw him the football, Teddy Marchabrota used him and put him in that spot, and then we had such success with him. I think there's no question that his was a Hall of Fame career, not only in its numbers, but for the meaning of it.
I was talking to Marv Levy, and I made this point last week, and you were right there. Let me see if I don't know if you agree with this observation or not. When he played here, there was a time when I would come to training camp every year and get a look at Andre. This is like mid-80s. He was a little bit bigger, a little bit thicker every year for about four or five straight years. He made himself into
not
the player
only
that
he was he physically better because he worked hard at it, he would work on an aspect of his game. One year it was run after the catch. One year it was routes. One year it was the deep ball. One year it was just hands and ability to catch in tough spots. Another year it was a technique of releases off the line against bump coverage. Every year he came back with an aspect of his game that he had focused on and worked very hard to improve, and he did it. And that was then I got here in 86. And even then I was like, wow, this guy has got some ability, but he's pretty raw. And then the next year he came back, and with Teddy Marchabrota, and I was here with Marv and Teddy almost exclusively, he started working on his route running, and all of a sudden he exploded. And you remember he got drafted in the same draft class as Chris Burkett. Mm-hmm. And he completely outdistanced Chris Burkett. He improved markedly when Chris didn't. And he filled out a role. And he's the guy, the investment that they started giving more money to because he was getting returns. And ultimately, Chris Burkett got edged off the team because Andre outshone him and they went in a different direction. So Andre, you're right. You can say what you want. It's not a trite to say because it's really true. He's a Hall of Famer because not only was he physically gifted, but he worked very, very hard to be great.
Have you talked with him since he got the award?
I have not. I mean, he's in power. Are you kidding me? I mean, that, he's like trying to get a hold of the president now. But I did text him, and I know all the guys did, and the word spread so fast through the group of guys, through the team, the old team, when he did get in. We found out. I know it was supposed to be announced at 7 p.m. on Saturday. I knew at 6. You know, I knew an hour beforehand that he had gotten in. It was phenomenal.
It says something about a team, which, as you painfully remembered a couple of minutes ago, a team that never won the championship, but that team has now Andre Reed joining Bruce Smith, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Marv Levy, Bill Polian still to come, James Lofton. Sure. It's an amazing collection of talent.
Absolutely.
That roster.
There were great players, truly great players. Cornelius Bennett was a phenomenal athlete and a great player and a tremendous teammate. Daryl Talley and Bruce, the best defensive lineman really in of all time. Jim Kelly, who was absolutely, you know, not only did he have the huge arm, but it was more of his toughness and his attitude that really personified our whole team. And Thurman had the chip on his shoulder that was the size of the stadium throughout from the time he was not drafted in the first round to the time he retired. And actually, the time he got inducted in the Hall of Fame, it was then when he finally lost that chip on his shoulder. I mean, so you're right. It does say a lot about what that team really was, because we not only did we have a great Hall of Fame head coach who pulled all the right strings and pushed all the right buttons, but we had truly great players.
Steve Tasker in studio with us, and along with Andre Reed, in his class for the Hall of Fame goes longtime Raiders punter Ray Guy.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on that?
Well, and I think for me and for Ray, not for Ray, but in my view of how Ray went, you know, he didn't get in for so many years because there were maybe 50 I heard the number between 48 and 50 punters, over 50 punters who had better career numbers than Ray Guy did. But it was my estimation, and I think Ray agreed with me, and a lot of the players agreed with me, those 50 guys that came after him with the great career numbers were inspired and are there because Ray Guy had the career he did, because Ray Guy was committed to being a good player who was the first truly game-changing punter. So he is responsible for the guys who came after him that really outshone him in the numbers, but the meaning of his career, and I think now in retrospect, I think it's more fitting that the veteran players voted Ray in than it was for the writers to vote him in, because I think that is even more special for a guy like Ray Guy than it would be if he got in on a first ballot.
For a punter to be in, though, opens the door somewhat to special teamers like yourself. You've been mentioned.
Well,
you've been voted on. You've had a couple of cracks.
I was a finalist for a couple of times. And,
yeah.
But I mean, Jan Stenerud was already in, a kicker, and that really didn't change things for guys like me. I don't know that Ray Guy will change it that much either. And it's hard for me to sit here. I mean, sure. I mean, I enjoy the conversation; it's flattering. But you know, I'm really uncomfortable putting myself in the conversation with the likes of the guys we've been talking about, even on my own team.
But what about putting yourself in the conversation with a Ray Guy, who maybe has a half dozen punts a game? You're in on, what, 20 plays a game as a special teamer?
Well, the similarity may be there, because certainly there are, you know, guys past Ray who had better careers than Ray did. But, you know, and I'm maybe one of the first early guys who was ever spoken about away from the game as being a guy who people recognized and who acknowledged as being a different kind of guy, or maybe the first guy that they noticed at that position. So certainly that similarity is there, but I don't know. That may be where it stops.
I mean, I don't want you to campaign for yourself, but you're aware that people.
And I know I'm not going to do that. I am not.
You need a campaign manager.
I am not going to do that. And I know that once you get to be a finalist, that people want to talk to you and they want to find out. And I, you know, if you make that final cut where you get in the room of that 15 finalists, because that's, and for Andre, it was a key thing, because then they could actually open up and they had an open debate with the guys who were voting. And you had a chance to make a case for yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that was really key for Andre and some other guy, and for Ray Guy as well. When you get to be a finalist where they can say, wait a minute, you know, think about in these terms. And that gave other voters a chance to change their mind about a guy from a different perspective. Like with Dan Hampton, when he finally got to be a finalist, they said, well, listen, the team had an 85% win record when he was on the field, and they had a 42% when he was off the field. And that changes some people's perspectives.
Sure. We've talked today about the Super Bowl. We've talked today about the Hall of Fame. They both happen on the same weekend. Does seeing your teammates being recognized for the Pro Football Hall of Fame ease the pain of losing those four Super Bowls? I mean, you've experienced both this
right.
past
well,
weekend.
Well, you know, now in so many years, I mean, you kind of get over the pain of it, you know, until you see a team like Denver struggle against Seahawks, and it all comes rushing back for me. I mean, I was really uncomfortable watching that game this last Super Bowl. It really bothered me. I really had to leave the
room. Why do you think you identified so much with Denver?
I've been in a position on that team, and I was in that Super Bowl 27 in Pasadena where we turned over nine times. I had one of those turnovers. It's hard. I mean, it makes me sick to think about the struggle that you go through to get to that game and then to have it go like that. It's
you
hard.
Also made the play that you're most recognized for.
Yeah, blocking the punt early on when the game was still in doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the struggle. That's the nature of the game we play. You can be great one moment and give up a touchdown the next. I mean, that's why it's a great competition. It's why it's so compelling to watch every game. I mean, we had like however many games there are in a year, 260 or something. They're all awesome. And, I mean, they're all special. But when you've been in a bad situation like the Broncos were, like I have been, and all the guys I played with in that game have been, yeah, there's a lot of mental scar tissue there that you had to deal with still.
You're amazing. You're a fan. Thank you for doing this. You are a fan. Much more of a fan than I thought you'd be.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. The game is awesome.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't know if we have time for this, but I'll tell you this. Yeah. I tell people this. The NFL is very, very special for a lot of reasons. One is the way it's run. All the teams share everything. And Green Bay and Buffalo and New Orleans and Jacksonville compete with New York and Chicago and L.A., or if there was an L.A. Yeah. team, and Miami, and all the and Houston and Chicago, all these big teams. We can Philly, Washington, we can compete with those teams. That's special. A second thing is, the real sacred thing for the way that the NFL is run is in management. The sacred thing is fan interest. If the fans want the game to change a little bit, they will change it to give fans what they want to make the game completely exciting for them. The game is not sacred. The fans are sacred. And they'll change the game. And you've seen it. We change the game every year to make a little bit more of what the fans would like to see. And I think those two things, the fact that big cities are, you know, can compete with the small ones, and that they change the game to make it special, you know, give the fans what they want, is special. And the third thing and the last thing that makes this game better than anything, and I stand on the sidelines for radio and for some TV, and I stand right on the sidelines and watch the game up as close as you can possibly get, and you can't not watch it. You see big genetic freaks playing for keeps, and I mean I know this because this is the way I played. They play as though their very lives depend on it, and it's a physical confrontation between big, huge men who are playing for absolutely as though their lives depend on it. And it is really compelling to watch. That's why I'm a fan. For all those reasons, this game is so special. And that's why it's not going anywhere. It's just going to get better.
Heck with the Hall of Fame. You should be the next commissioner. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, man. It's great
seeing
you.
Steve Tasker, the Bills Wall of Famer and the CBS analyst. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.